Welcome to the 26th episode of the official Espigan podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you are. I'm in Kerment in Hungary, and the production team, Selma Ertl and Manuel Schuster, are in Graz, Austria. And today's interviewee, Dr. Anna Mocic-Pavic, is in Zagreb, Croatia. Dr. Pavic is a hollow viscous person. Speaking as a liver man, it's to be regretted. She's given our community a lot, and if she'd only chosen to go the path of the Lord, well, who knows? But finishing her internship, she entered a scientific novice sort of residency at a referral center for pediatric gastroenterology there in Zagreb. I don't know what caught her on pediatric gastroenterology during her first year, but it caught her, and she caught it, and she's held on to it ever since. She's now a pediatrician, a pediatric GI person in Zagreb at the Children's Hospital. And as I say, her principal interest is in inflammatory bowel disease and in functional bowel disease. And oddly enough, her CV includes a certificate in the uses of hypnotherapy. I withdraw the oddly enough, maybe for functional bowel disease, it's the only way to go. But it did catch my eye. Anna, welcome.
Hi. Hi to everyone who is listening this broadcast.
Let's start with your first big article, which I think was put together when you were just emerging from that research fellowship. It's the Impact 3 questionnaire.
Yes.
The validation of that study in Croatian children, seeing whether or not an international scoring system for inflammatory bowel disease patients worked in Croatia. Tell us what you found.
Well, this research was the part of the PhD research of a colleague who is the first author of this article, and we worked together on his research. And what we found, we just wanted to see if this very valid measure of health-related quality of life could be applied to our patients because of the cross-cultural adaptation and those things that are different maybe from the other countries and the adolescents and children. So we wanted to see how it can be applied to our patients, because we just started to realize that we have increasing incidence of patients with inflammatory bowel disease, and that there is a lack of this kind of data. So that was the first idea of gathering this type of the research. So what we found that the Impact 3 questionnaire has a very good correlation with the scoring. We compared it with the standardized pediatric quality of life already known questionnaire, and it came with good scores. And the conclusion was that we could easily apply to our patients and to follow them during the follow-up of those patients in our clinic.
I get you. Where was that scoring system originally developed? I've forgotten.
Well, I think it was in America.
Well, there are a lot of differences between North American cultural habits and Croatian cultural habits. Croatians have such a better life, let me tell you. You come from down on the seacoast, don't you?
Yes.
Ah, where everybody in the world wants to spend vacation, and she was born. It's just unfair, is all I can say. Anyhow, what kinds of differences did you anticipate finding that you didn't find?
Well, we have really good correlation in all those five topics that we wanted to cover. That what was included with emotional, with physical health, with psychosocial health, and with the bowel movement. So this responded very well. The only concern was that we didn't have maybe enough number of the patients, but we also have to relay that almost 50% of the patients that were diagnosed in our clinics were included in this type of the research.
So has there been an Impact 4 score, or is Impact 3 still state of the art?
Impact 3 is still state of the art. And all the relevance...
Go on, go on.
All the relevant studies that are currently being in progress now, they are still using the Impact 3 questionnaire.
That was another thing that I wanted to touch on. It's still in use.
Yes.
And how has it worked out for you in the 10 years since publication? Are there refinements that you think could be made, should be made? Or is it still, as it is, good enough?
I think that it's still good enough, but I think that we still lack in applying this type of the questionnaires in our daily clinical work, because I think that sometimes we don't have enough time to validate this type of the questionnaires. So I think that we should be more persistent of applying this type of the questionnaires in daily practice.
Now, that's something you're going to have to take up, is beating on your colleagues and beating on your juniors to do the needful.
Yes.
But maybe it's time for a 10-year follow-up study saying, we've used it, and this is how it works, and this is how we use it outside a study in daily clinical practice.
And, okay. That is a good idea.
Oh, well. Good ideas are easy. Hard work is not. Let's move on to your next publication, which was a summary of what it was like to treat inflammatory bowel disease patients in a referral center in Croatia. I think you have three large pediatric gastroenterologic centers, two in Zagreb?
Yes, and one in Rijeka.
One in Rijeka. I avoided attempting to pronounce that town's name until I'd heard you say it. Oh, these alphabets. So tell us about what you studied and what you found in examining that set of patients.
Well, this was my first of the biggest, I would say, articles that I've done as the young fellow. And I was proud of this article because for the first time we collected the data, although it was collected retrospectively, about the patients with inflammatory bowel disease in Croatia. Up to that article in 2014, only data were available from the adult population. So this was a very huge progress of my team. It's also happened concordantly when the EuroKids IBD register was starting with the data. And after my article, in 2 years, we started with the national register of our patients. The other colleague did the PhD thesis on this topic. So now we are proud that we have national register that still goes on, and we have valuable data of our patients from that register.
What have you mined from that registry so far?
Well, we calculated the incidence of the Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis in Croatia, and we came with the conclusion that we also have this trend that is happening across Europe, called north-south gradient, where we see that there is a high incidence in the northern part of the Croatia, comparing to the south parts of the Croatia.
Even within one country?
Even without one country, that is very interesting, that we have north-south gradient. And we try that to explain that we are very geographically very interested country, because in the northern parts it's like more being to the attached to the northern part of the Europe, and the coast and the south of our country is more related to the Mediterranean countries of the Europe. So that is what is something geographically very, very interesting of our country.
Well, geography is one thing, but what aspect of geography, what aspect of daily life and perhaps of food choices might underlie that? It's nothing like so the difference between buckwheat eaters and potato eaters. That's a west to east gradient.
Yes.
But there's also, or the olive oil versus butter gradient, which we see between the south of France and the top.
Yes, and also refer to the sun.
Ah, okay, of course.
We have more sunny days in the south of the Croatian than in the northern part of our countries. And that's bringing the question of the vitamin D.
Well, let's get back to the most important thing in life for a pediatric gastroenterologist, which is eating. What are the differences in the diet, in the food choices?
Well, that is also something that we are trying to conduct research on that. But as we can tell that there is a difference in eating habit in the northern parts and in the southern parts. As you said, we are the northern parts are more prone to the influence of the Germany and the Austrian countries and this mm-hmm. type of the diet, while the south part of the Croatia are more influenced with the Mediterranean diet, using olive oil, fish, vegetables, including greens, and this type of the diet, which means in a modern term, like more healthier food than those eating on the northern. But we also see that though we have these differences, that there is still influence of the, I would say, westernized diet also in Mediterranean part of our country. So it's becoming more popular than it was before, because it's more approachable and more, it's more now you can reach it more easier than before.
Rather, as white bread was an item of prestige in some countries. And yeah, well, I think you have to choose your reviewers for the upcoming article very carefully, because if you send a manuscript that proves that schnitzel is a risk factor for inflammatory bowel disease, I think that the German and Austrian reviewers will just trample all over that.
And put the X on it.
You got it. So that is an accomplishment indeed, to set up the registry and to mine it and to find that some trends track those in other countries. Are there trends that don't track other countries? Are there differences?
Well, not so much. So with the incidence and the phenotype of the disease that we see in our patients, it's much more similar to the western part of the Europe. So we are now, with these trends, we are similar to the western part of the Europe. Not in the other things, I would include economics and similar, but with this type of the trends, we are very similar to the western part.
It certainly facilitates taking part in multi-institution studies, at least from Europe. Let's turn now to the third article that you asked that we would think about today, and that is nutritional status and food intake in pediatric patients, very significantly.
Yes, that was the article that I've done with my two younger colleagues, and it was also the part of my PhD thesis, because my PhD thesis refers to the self-imposed elimination diets with newly diagnosed patients of inflammatory bowel disease. So when I tried to collect the patients for my PhD research, then we started to involve the control groups and all the newly diagnosed IBD patients. So that was like the first article and the results that we have. And it was one of the kind, because for the first time we had the report of what does newly diagnosed patients with IBD eat at the time of the diagnosis. And we could compare that with the control group. The differences that we found that there was a lower intake of all macronutrients and some of the micronutrients in the patients with ulcerative colitis, and for the patients with Crohn's disease, we found it only for the animal proteins and calcium. The difference was seen because there are not so many of this type of articles at the point of time when this article was published, so we could not compare it with the relevant studies, because this was the one of the kind at that time research.
And stopping you here. So what you're saying, I think, is that people had been monitoring diet in patients who had been diagnosed, but not at the time of diagnosis.
Yes.
So that you come with a diagnosis and you're assigned a diagnosis, and then you were talking about self-imposed elimination diets in which people say, I'm going to try to get rid of this and see if it helps, try to get rid of that and see if it helps. And it's no longer the baseline in which these kids developed inflammatory bowel disease. And yours was one of the first studies, or the first study, to grab those data when the patient presented, yes?
Yes.
That's right. That's an accomplishment.
That was accomplished, because after that, we followed those patients for 1 year and tried to see from that, in that 1 year, did they start any of the self-imposed elimination diet?
Uh-huh.
That is the article that is now being submitted, and we will see it's going to be accepted for the publication.
Oh, don't tease. Don't tell us what you found.
We found that the 50% of the almost 50% of the patients try to with some of the self-imposed elimination diet during the 1 year of the follow-up of the after we diagnosed the disease.
But if I've understood your article correctly, even before they sought medical attention, even before they had an IBD diagnosis, they had self-modified their diets to the point of decreasing intakes of one set of foods or another set of foods. I'm thinking now of the fructose intolerant children who don't care for sweets. Something makes them feel bad, they change their diet on their own, even before a diagnosis ever is achieved. Your controls were age-matched patients?
Yes.
Age and gender-matched patients,
yes.
Of course. Okay. And those kids were eating like nobody's business, eating like a house of fire.
Yes.
And the IBD patients, were they picky eaters? Did they? Tell me more.
Well, those patients tend to decrease the intake of the different type of the foods. Sometimes they are advised from the primary care doctors if they have diarrhea or stomach pain. They try, let's do a little bit more easier diet to see if the symptoms will improve. And
right,
that's the
right.
reasons why they start with this type of the elimination diet. And I would like to say that milk and dairy products are the most common that they choose to exclude. Because they usually tend to connect the diarrhea with the consumption of the milk, and we know that could be a risky situation because that could influence on the intake of the calcium and vitamin D in the patients who are or children who are in the growth period of his or her life.
Yes, and that's exactly what you found, isn't it?
Yes. That
these kids were short and skinny.
Yes.
Okay.
And as we all know, that the patients at the diagnosis are malnutritioned.
Are malnourished indeed, yeah.
Yes.
So, again, a lovely accomplishment. And have other researchers identified similar findings?
Yes. Yes, it's happening now. As I see in the literature, there are some of the researchers that already published the data and that are similar to ours, and it's coming more matter of interest because the diet is one of the things that where the patients feel that they can influence, and somehow on that way that can influence on their disease.
Now you're giving a talk to a cluster of general pediatricians. Put yourself in that position. And you're saying, when are you doing your growth charts for your kids? Are they starting to fall off the growth charts? Then here's something to think about. Get them to us faster. Is that a follow-up message, a take-home message?
I would say that is the correct message because when you, especially with the Crohn's disease, because with ulcerative colitis, you will have the blood in the stool and that they will rush to the emergency department and
of
those symptoms. But Crohn's disease is a sneaky disease and it can last for a couple of years that we need to be to diagnose this type of the patient. So if you follow your patient regularly, and if you see that there is something happening, especially before the puberty, or if the puberty is delayed, please consider this type of the disease.
Delayed puberty already marks substantial malnutrition,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
It is.
So what you've got then is, you've got, just get up out of bed and go to school. I don't care if your stomach hurts. and this is not a restaurant. We don't feed everybody in this family something different. Eat or just go hungry. And, oh, those poor kids.
Well, sometimes it happens with me and my children, my kid.
And your child. Well, okay. I have really enjoyed this chat, and I've taken away from it information that I didn't have, because, again, I only approach the hollow viscera with gun and camera. They're just not the fields of the Lord in which I play with the liver. But but you've made... Oh, we never talked about the hypnotherapy. Give us two words about the hypnotherapy. Why did you want to take that course?
Well, after I become a pediatrician and started to work in my outpatient clinic, I realized that I see this type of the patients with the functional GI disease very often, and I tried to see what's the way I can help them, because none of those recommendations that we had before was not working. And then I met with this area of gut hypnotherapy, and in that same time I went to London, because I went to the Great Ormond Street Hospital for motility education, and then I saw that there are lots of adult clinics for this type of the help, and the literature showed that, especially in the Netherlands, the colleagues from the Netherlands are very involved in this type of the help, and that they have a good results. And that's how I become very interested in this type of therapy to provide with my patients.
I have only two questions for follow-up, and that is, are you using it in Croatia?
Yes, I'm using it now with my patients, especially with IBS and functional abdominal pain.
And second question for follow-up, is a manuscript in preparation?
Not yet, because we are now planning to start the internet application, so we can go with the online. COVID showed us that we need to be more prepared for this type of the situations, and we could not provide very good health care during the COVID. And that's why I considered doing this online. And there are already published articles on this topic, so mine will be related to my experience, probably.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this point, we generally ask folks for something to point out that although ESPGHAN is an international body, and ESPGHAN's work is, of course, international, everyone has a homeland. Everyone has something that reminds them of where they grew up, how they were brought up, and often that can be evoked by a song. Have you chosen a song for us to hear?
Well, there is a very special song. It's from an old singer in Croatia. She's very famous, and I admire her a lot. But it's maybe a little bit sad song, but it's singing about the youth and love, and with not so happy ending.
Oh, my. As I approach the age of 70, I can completely understand why she's singing that.
But she has a great voice. You, although it's on a Croatian language, you will feel the emotions that she has during this song.
If you would like to listen to the song, check out our Spotify playlist, ESPGHAN's Favorite Songs.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you. Thank you all for having me. And I just want to say hi to all the young ESPGHAN community across Europe and across the world.